Tonight we've been asked to read out of Mark 9, 14 to 24. Mark 9, 14 to 24. And when he came unto his disciples, he saw a great multitude around them, and the scribes questioned with them. And straightway all the people, when they beheld him, were greatly amazed, and all running to salute him. And he asked the scribes, What question ye with them? And one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and foameth, and gnasheth with his teeth, and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples that they should cast him out, and they could not. And he answered him and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. And they brought him unto him, and when he saw him, straightway the spirit tear him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed foaming. And he asked his father, How long is it ago since I came unto him? And he said, Of a child. And oftentimes it hath cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. And Jesus said, If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. And straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief. With these thoughts on our minds, let's bow for prayer.
I remember frequently when Brother Steve would get up here and begin his messages, he would often just stand up here for a little bit and look out at the audience and smile at us. I remember that, Steve. And I understand why you did that. It is good to look out on the congregation and to see each of you here tonight. And as I look out at you, I think about what I know of you and the respect that I have for you. And I think about the maturity that I have seen in you. And how when I think of you, I think of you as being these mature disciples of Christ, a mature believer. Now, what does that mean? How would you describe somebody who is a mature believer and a disciple of Christ? Well, you might say that it's somebody who's a student of the Word. You might say it's that a mature believer and a disciple of Christ is someone who's conscientious in their walk with Christ, and that sometimes you stumble, but you know how to get back up and go on after you stumble and fall. And when I think of you, I think of people who are confronted by challenges to your faith, but you know how to answer your challenges, those challenges. And I think of you as being people who have a firm faith that's unshaken by trials or attacks or by skeptics. Now, is all of that true for each one of us all the time? Especially those last two parts I'm thinking about here, of being confronted by challenges to our faith, that's true for all of us. But do we always know how to answer that? And sometimes we have a firm faith, but do we always have a faith that's unshaken, whether it's by trials or by attacks or by skeptics? Is there anybody here tonight who can say that your faith has never been shaken and you've never been confronted by something that you didn't have the answer for right away, and that you've never had questions that rolled around for a while and you weren't sure how to answer them? I doubt that there is anyone who can say that, because it seems to be something that's common to us. And you might think that you could say, well, a mature believer in Christ never has any doubts. But that wouldn't necessarily be true. And if we're honest, I think we'll admit that all of us sometimes don't know how to answer some of the questions that we face. And sometimes our faith does seem a little shaky. And that can be hard to admit. Part of it is because, you know, all of us naturally want other people to think good of us, and so we don't want to let on to anybody else that we do have questions. And if you're questioning, and if you've got some things that just are really bothering you, it's hard to open up and tell somebody about it, because what are they going to think about me? And should I be feeling this way? Maybe these are things that I shouldn't even think or shouldn't even feel. And you wonder about that to the point that sometimes when you have those questions, it can start to frighten you. And you start wondering, well, what's going on with me? Where is my faith? And sometimes we wonder what's going to happen to our faith, but we don't know what to do about the questions that we have when we have doubts. And that's what I'd like to talk about tonight, is what to do when we have doubts. It can be a little bit like if you're driving on a route that you drive all the time. Think about those of you who drive to work, or maybe, let's say, you grew up in Franklin County or something, and you're used to driving back and forth from there for visits, wherever it might be. You know the route. You know what the roads are. You know where you need to turn. You're used to it. You know this is the place. Sometimes you even get used to seeing the same cars on your route if you go at the same time. And so it's all comfortable. You don't even really have to think about it. You can do a lot of other things. You can be thinking about other things and not even remember, you know, did I cross the river or not? I can't remember driving across the river, but oh yeah, here I am, so I must have. And that's normal. And then suddenly there is a sign in front of you that says road closed. And you've got to make a detour, and you're not used to that, because you only know the route that you're on. You don't know the side roads, but you have to get off. And pretty soon you find yourself wandering around on some back roads that you've never seen before. And you're not exactly sure where you are, and you're feeling a little anxious about it. You know you're off course, you don't know exactly where you are, and you don't know how to get back to where you need to be. And that's a little bit how it can feel like for a believer when they start having doubts. Everything was going along fine, you knew where you were, it was comfortable. Something came up that you hadn't thought about, and now you're where you didn't expect to be, and you don't know how to get back to where you want to be. And the purpose of the message tonight is to encourage those, anyone who might be doubting, to encourage them to persist in their faith. Not to answer the doubts. This is not apologetics tonight, to take the different things that we might doubt and try to firm up our faith in those, but how to approach it and how to go about it if you have doubts and if you have questions that you don't know how to answer. Now, I don't intend tonight to speak to people who doubt for a different reason. I realize that some people, because of the experiences they have had, especially of instances of abuse, it can be very difficult to trust, and it can be difficult to trust God because of that. That's a different kind of doubt, dealt with in a different way. And we're not talking tonight to people who have rejected the faith, to scoffers. They don't need to be encouraged. They need to be warned and put back on the path. Or to people who think that in their walking away from God, they're going to gain freedom. That's a different issue also. But I do want to speak tonight to people whose faith has been challenged by ideas that you've never encountered before. Things that you never thought about, you've seen these, they've confronted you, and they're new to you, and they kind of seem to make sense. And you find it a little compelling. Or maybe you've had experiences that you can't quite figure out how it's supposed to work out and what it all means and how it fits in with everything that you thought you believed about God in the Bible. Or some of you that are younger, as you grow up, you know, your parents have taught you certain things about God and the Bible. And if you went to a Christian school, you learned it there and you learned it in Sunday school. But you grow up and you start thinking more for yourself. And you're not quite sure how to put all of these things together. Do they really make sense? Do they not? And there's questions that you have, and sometimes you're not sure what to do about those questions. So I want to speak tonight to people who feel like maybe they're wondering in their faith and they're feeling distressed by that. Well, what is doubt? If you look up the word doubt in an English dictionary, you're going to see quite a few definitions. The basic idea that we're discussing is to be uncertain of, or to lack confidence in. Uncertainty and lacking confidence are the basic ideas behind doubt. Now, if you look for the word doubt in the Bible, especially in the King James Version, you're only going to see it a few times in the Old Testament, and none of those times really have that sense that we're looking at tonight. In the New Testament, there's three different ways that it's used. One of them doesn't have to do with this. One of them just has the idea of being perplexed. Like when Jesus was having his Last Supper, and it says that he told, in John 13, it says that he told his disciples that one of them would betray him. And it says that they looked at each other, doubting of whom he spake. It just means they were perplexed. They couldn't figure it out. They wondered and they didn't have the answer. That's not what we're talking about either. But there are two words. I'm going to look at just two scriptures in Matthew that are examples of the New Testament uses of the words for doubt. Matthew 21, verse 21. After Jesus had cursed the fig tree, Jesus answered and said unto them, "Verily I say unto you, if ye have faith and doubt not, ye shall not only do this which is done to the fig tree, but also if ye shall say unto this mountain, Be thou removed and be thou cast into the sea, it shall be done." That's one of the uses of the word doubt. The other, Matthew 28:17, would be the other Greek word. This was when Jesus had appeared to his disciples in Galilee after his resurrection. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. The basic ideas about doubt in the New Testament is that of wavering, of being kind of in the middle between two things and being unable to decide which of those directions you should go. Being unable to commit yourself to one or the other. Doubt has to do with faith, but doubt is not a complete lack of faith, and doubt isn't a complete rejection of faith. Doubt is somewhere between 100% complete assurance on this hand, and the other side would be 100% complete rejection over here. Doubt is in between. And doubt has the idea of being on the faith side, but looking over here toward the unbelief side, and of thinking, well, that makes sense, and being pulled over there toward that. That's what doubt would be. Vincent says that doubt is the hesitation which balances between faith and unbelief and feels an inclination toward the latter. So doubt might be, you might doubt because you think science tells you to doubt. Can I really be sure that God created everything the way that I thought he did? Hasn't science proved that the universe is billions of years old? And for some people, that's compelling. You might doubt God's character. You've been told that God is love, but then you look around and you see how everybody treats each other. And you think, well, how can a loving God permit that? And then you also have been told that God is love, and yet you know that there are people who would be destined for eternal punishment, and how can a loving God do that? And so you begin to doubt either God's love or his power. And that can be compelling. You might doubt the doctrines of the church. You can't understand the Trinity, and it doesn't make sense to you, and you look in the Bible and you don't see the word Trinity anywhere. And so you start wondering, well, does the Bible really teach about a triune God the way I have always been told that it did? And so you doubt those doctrines of the church. Or you might feel that you can't really trust the scriptures, the inspiration and the inerrancy or the authority of the scriptures. It seems like you found something that contradicts in the Bible. And if God wrote it, how could he contradict himself? Sometimes you go through hard times in your life. And you think, this is a really difficult time. And I've been trying to live for God. And this is what I get for it. And then I look around and I see all these people that are living however they want, and they don't have any problems. And you begin to question whether or not this is really whether it's worth it or not. And the doubt that I often face, and I'll admit it, what if everything that I thought I believed, what if all of this really isn't true and it's just what the atheists say? That it's all something that people made up because it makes them feel better. Well, some things that I have observed about doubt. First of all, doubt is not desirable. Now, I know that postmoderns would kind of say that you can't really know anything for certain. In fact, there's a lot of people today that have the idea that if you do claim to know something for certain, then there's something wrong with you, and especially, you know, your attitude isn't right. You shouldn't be saying that you know things for certain, and that's arrogant. Well, doubt is not desirable. It is okay to believe and express yourself with certainty. I was thinking about this. What if the Apostle Paul had written his letters with that kind of attitude that some people today think we should have? What if he had written to Timothy and he had said, you know, Timothy, I might be wrong about this, but I think I do know the one that I've committed things to, the one that I've believed, and it seems like he's probably able to keep what I've committed to him. Now, at least that's what I think. Maybe you have a different idea. That's not how the Apostle Paul wrote. Doubt is not desirable. You can't live in that state all the time. It's unpleasant, and doubt may hinder our prayers, and doubt may hinder God's answers to them. We looked at one of those verses this morning in Sunday school, James chapter 1, verse 6. Let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. And that's one of the Greek words for doubt right there, with wavering. First observation, doubt is not desirable. We don't want to be there. We know that. We don't want to live in that state. Second, doubt is rebuked in the Bible. Jesus frequently rebuked his disciples for their weak faith. Now, doubt is not complete rejection of faith, but it is a degree of unbelief. And that is warned against in Scripture. If we persist in our doubts and we don't return to faith, there is the danger of falling away. Hebrews has several of those warnings about falling away through unbelief. Doubt is not desirable. Doubt is rebuked. Those are some of the observations about doubt in Scripture. But on the other hand, I also observe from Scripture that doubt is part of the believer's experience. Go back to the people of faith and think about them in the Scriptures. You could think about Job. He had some measures of doubt. King David, if you read the Psalms, you will find all sorts of expressions of doubt. Asaph, Psalm 73, a great example of one who did doubt. And it seems in this case that it was a doubt that persisted. It wasn't just a fleeting thought that he had. This was something that was going through his mind over and over and really troubled him. The prophets, at times, they doubted their mission. At times, they doubted whether God was really going to do what he said. John the Baptist, He began to wonder if Jesus was the one who was sent. Zechariah doubted when the angel came to him. Even, I just read, Matthew 28:17, some of Jesus' followers, after the resurrection, even were skeptical that it really was him. Some doubted, it says. Doubt is part of the believer's experience, and doubt is part of being human. We live in time. Things change for us. Nothing is constant. And so even our faith changes and varies in time. Those of you who have been married for several years, you know what it's like in marriage. Feelings don't stay the same all the time. Feelings change, and partly just in time they change. And that's normal because we're human. Even our physical bodies can affect our thoughts and our emotions and our spiritual life. Sometimes our physical bodies can cause us to doubt because of things that are going on there. I read one man, D.A. Carson, speaking on doubt, said, "Sometimes the godliest thing you can do is get a good night's sleep. Not pray all night, but sleep." And that's true. Sometimes that does affect us. Because we're human, we're always inclined to walk by sight, not by faith. So doubt is part of being human, and it's part of the believer's experience. But doubt doesn't need to be final, and this is my fourth observation about doubt. Doubt can be resisted, doubt can be overcome, and it doesn't have to last forever. And if you have doubted, and even if you have gone through a crisis in your faith, a time of severe questioning when you almost walked away from everything, that doesn't mean that God can never use you again. Think about those biblical examples of doubt. You think of King David. He came back. In the end, Job did. Asaph talks about what happened to him. Zechariah did name his son John in the end, showing his faith. All of them did come back. So the four things about doubt, that it doesn't need to be final. It is part of the believer's experience, even though it's rebuked and it's not desirable. Now, if doubt can be resisted, let's talk about some things there practically. If you feel like you have doubts sometimes, especially if they're the doubts that keep coming back and you don't know what to do with them, you want to know how to address your doubts. You want to know how to handle them. These would be five things that I would say to those who doubt. And you could say, there could be more than five, but these are just five simple ones, partly from my own observations and partly from reading some things from pastors and counselors about doubt. If you doubt, resist it. First thing I would just say is resist doubt. If you're interested, I have an article by Philip Graham Ryken I would share with you on this. I think it's practical and it's short, but it's good if you are doubting. Resist doubt. Recognize that there's something more going on here with spiritual doubt. It's not just a question of understanding, like when you were in school and you were trying to figure out a subject. Doubt's different because it involves our faith, and the devil's going to use it as an opportunity. Doubt will be a temptation. And so just like any temptation, we need to resist it just as we would a temptation to any other sin. James chapter 4, verse 7, resist the devil and he will flee from you. And even in this, resist it. And sometimes I think a lot that we're kind of naive about doubts. And I was just thinking of what this might be like. If you've been camping and you're sleeping in a tent in the woods at night, and you hear something rustling around in your campsite and you hear things with your food, when it's really dark and really quiet, everything's a lot scarier. And so, you know, you start thinking of things like bears getting into your food, and then if they don't like your food, maybe coming into your tent after you. And you get up in the morning and you find just, you know, some little paw prints of some small animal that was around with your food in the night. Sometimes that's kind of how it is with doubts to the believer. They seem a lot bigger, and so we just feel like, well, I can't resist this. It's too powerful. I don't know how to answer this. It's overwhelming me. Push back. Fight back against your doubts and resist them. They can be resisted. Even if it's as simple as something like David Powlison says, take a 3x5 card, write your doubt on one side, turn it over and write one of God's promises on the other side that addresses that doubt, and rehearse those. But resist your doubts. That would be the first thing. Second, and I hadn't thought about this before, this mainly comes from Tim Keller, doubt your doubts. A lot of times when something comes along and somebody says something that attacks something we believe, it's like, I don't know how to answer this. Well, that really makes sense. Apparently, what I was taught isn't right and it isn't true. And we just start questioning without questioning the attack against your faith. Doubt your doubts. Demand the same level of proof from your doubts that those doubts demand from the truth. So when somebody comes along and attacks something that you believe, and they start questioning the truth of this, well, demand that the person who's attacking prove their point. Don't just accept it and give them a free pass. So when somebody says, the Bible is full of all of these contradictions, and that proves that the Bible can't be the Word of God. Instead of saying, oh yeah, I never thought about that before, there really are contradictions in the Bible. Look at it. Take what they say and examine what they say and see if those really are contradictions, and go to people who have studied it and just see if they're really making sense after all. Or if somebody says, well, the universe is about 13 to 15 billion years old, and we can prove it by looking at these things in the rocks, and all of this proves that the universe is much older than the 6 or 7,000 years that the Bible would say. Well, does science really say that? Demand that the people who attack your faith, demand that they prove their point, instead of demanding that the ones who defend the faith have to prove it. Doubt your doubts. Don't just take those doubts as the final word. You know, when we start doubting something, what we're really doing is questioning this belief, but you don't just reject this belief and have an empty spot there. If you reject this belief, you're going to put another belief there in place of it. So instead of just rejecting belief A, question the belief that wants to replace it. Doubt your doubts. Resist your doubts. Doubt your doubts. Third, if you have doubts, live by the faith that you do still have. You still have some faith. You haven't rejected all of it. You're not even questioning all of it. Live by the faith that you do have. Some people feel like if they are questioning this part of their faith, then all of it must be wrong and they're just going to walk away from the whole package. Live by the faith that you do have. This is one of the reasons why I asked for the scripture to be read from Mark 9. You know, this man, this father who came to Jesus, he wasn't the only one there actually that had some doubts. Apparently the disciples also did. But look at what he says to Jesus in verse 22. And Jesus picks up on this, and so I want to also. The father said, if thou can do, I'm going to put it in our English. If you can do anything, have compassion and help us. And Jesus picked up on what he said there with the if. He said, the man had said, if you can do anything. And Jesus said, if you can believe, All things are possible to him that believes. So he had doubts, and Jesus knew that. But he went on to say, and it says he said with tears, and I like that picture because I can recognize that in a father. The extreme distress that he was in and knowing that he had his doubts, and yet he persisted through them. And remember, he had come to Jesus. Even though he had doubts, he came. He had enough faith to come. And he said, I do believe, help my unbelief. Live by the faith that you still have. He had doubts, but he still came to Jesus. Think about Asaph in Psalm 73. He had those questions. Why are all these rich people walking around getting fat and healthy? And here I am, things aren't going good for me, and I'm trying to live right. What did Asaph do when he had those questions? The more important question is, where did he go? He went to the house of the Lord. He continued to live by the faith that he still had. He didn't walk away from the house of the Lord. John the Baptist, when he had questions about Jesus, what did he do? He went straight to Jesus. Well, he couldn't, but he sent straight to Jesus with his questions. If you have doubts, and there are some things that you're wondering about, do they really make sense? Are they true? Don't walk away from it all while you're doubting. Live by the faith that you still have. Keep on praying. Keep on reading the Word. Keep on going to church. James chapter 4, verse 8, right after talking about resisting the devil, says, draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Live by the faith that you have. Learn to live with uncertainty. It is not possible to prove everything for yourself with complete, absolute certainty. You can't do it. You and I can never go back and witness the resurrection. We cannot go back and witness the miracles that Jesus performed. We cannot prove with 100% complete certainty on those things. There's always going to be an element of faith, of accepting them because they seem to be the most likely things to believe. John chapter 20, verse 29, when Jesus appeared to Thomas, remember Thomas had said, I'm not going to believe unless I can touch the marks of the nails in his hands, unless I can thrust my hand into his side, he said. I'm not going to believe. And Jesus appeared to him and said, here I am, Thomas, see this? Now do you believe? And Thomas responded and said, my Lord and my God. And Jesus said, blessed are you. You have believed because you have seen. But he also said, blessed are they who have not seen and yet have believed. And that's us. We've not seen with our own eyes or touched with our own hands the risen Christ. And there will be some things that you and I will never be able to prove with complete certainty. Not only that, there are some things that are just going to be unknowable. Deuteronomy 29:29, the secret things belong to the Lord our God. I had someone tell me one time, as one of his arguments against the Trinity, he said, Jeff, I just cannot comprehend a God who can be three and one at the same time. And that was one of the reasons he wouldn't believe in the Trinity. That was one of the reasons he said he wasn't believing in the Trinity, was because he couldn't comprehend it. Well, how many things do we accept that we can't comprehend? Not only that, if God really is an infinite God, how would you and I ever be able to expect to comprehend him anyway? The finite cannot comprehend the infinite. And so that's no proof against anything related to God. We just have to learn to live with some uncertainty. Finally, to you who might be doubting, know the foundation of your faith. I don't know a whole lot about building. I know a little bit about a lot of things. But one of the things that I do know about building is when you start building a structure and you're going to pour a footer, you have to dig down deep enough that you're below the frost line and you're down to undisturbed soil. You want to get down to something that isn't going to move, and that's where you start building up from. If you have doubts, know the foundation of your faith. What is the most fundamental, crucial element of the Christian faith? Know that, believe that, and return to that when you doubt. I believe that's the atoning cross and the empty tomb. And recognize this. There is something unique about this book. This is what I come back to when I start having doubts. There is something unique about the Bible. It is full of names and places and dates. This is a history book. And that means that it makes historical claims about things that really happened in history and that could be disproven historically if it were possible, but they haven't been. And this is what I come back to all of the time. I just read a book, I think his name is Nabil Qureshi or something like that. I don't know how to pronounce Pakistani names. He was a Muslim, and he became friends with a Christian in college, and he set out to basically convert his Christian friend to Islam. And so he was studying Islam versus Christianity. And the more he studied, the more he realized the historical claims of Islam fell apart when they were examined, and the historical claims of the resurrection, the more they were examined, the stronger they were. That is the foundation of our faith. Know that it is a historical fact that is people who have studied it with an open mind and have rejected it before they studied it have come to accept it afterwards. Know the foundation of your faith, build from that. Finishing up with some things to say about those who doubt. A verse from Jude, verse 22. Remember, Jude is a letter that was written to address false teachers and false teachings. And in speaking about those who might be led astray, Jude said in verse 22, "And of some have compassion, making a difference." If you look at other recent translations, they will use that word that is translated as making a difference. And that's the same word as for doubt. And so they will say, have mercy on those who doubt. Have compassion, have mercy on those who doubt. Paul Copan said, alongside instructing the ignorant and comforting the sorrowful is counseling the doubtful. And so it does make a difference, and we should approach those who have doubts with mercy. So three things here. First of all, be discerning. If someone comes to you and they share with you the doubts that they have, be discerning in that. First of all, the real issue might not be the doubt. It might be an experience they've had that they need help working through. And it may be unrepented sin. If someone persists, keeps on doing something that they believed was wrong, they are going to feel shame and discomfort and distress for that. And there's really only two ways to deal with that distress. One is to stop doing it, or the other is to stop believing that it's wrong. And if you start doubting what you have been taught about sin, then you will start doubting other things also. It is possible that if someone comes to you and says they're having doubts, there may be a sin involved. But be careful about suggesting that unless you know that to be true, especially if the one who says they are doubting really seems to be genuinely distressed by their doubt. be discerning. Second, be thoughtful. Think about how you're going to respond if someone says, I'm questioning this, or how can this really be true? I think it was Augustine. When he was young, he went to some of the teachers in his church and he said, what was God doing before he created heaven and earth? And they kind of laughed at him and said, well, he was creating hell for people who ask questions like that. So be careful about how you answer people who come to you with their questions and their doubts. And if they say they're doubting, and especially if it's someone who's close to you, it might alarm you. But try not to respond with alarm. And the doubter is going to benefit if you consider their question carefully, so don't dismiss it with quick answers. Be discerning, be thoughtful, and third, be hopeful. If someone comes to you and shares their doubts with you, be hopeful. It may take some time for them to overcome doubt, but encourage them and encourage any progress that you see in them. I think I'm safe in saying this, that many and probably most doubters will return to faith. Not only that, I believe that most who struggle with their faith after they have returned to faith, that's a stronger point for most people than they had before. So be hopeful in dealing with those who doubt. I'll close by saying to those of you who may have doubts that have held you back from making a commitment, and you've been wanting to have your questions answered fully before you will commit yourself to something, just stop and think about how serious your indecision might be. If you are waiting for every one of your questions to get answered to your satisfaction, and so you never commit to Christ, and if Christ really is who he says he is, and the Bible is true, and yet you have been undecided, then there will come a time that all doubt will be removed from your mind, and you will not have any doubts anymore about Christ, but you will have regrets forever. And I would say, though, to the believer who is doubting, think back to what I said at the beginning about being lost. I had a woman, a customer, well, a potential customer at the time that she called, call a while back to our business. She was coming up from Maryland, bringing her mower up from Maryland, and she couldn't find our place. She was lost. And she couldn't even really tell me where she was in being lost. I said, well, what? Just look out the window. She wasn't driving. She was pulled over in a parking lot. I said, look out the window. Tell me what you see. She said, well, across the street, I see a used car lot. And right next to me, I see a hair salon. Okay, well, what's the name of the hair salon? It's Hollywood Hair. Oh, okay, I know right where you are. Pull out of the parking lot, turn right, and just keep going. When you come to the stoplight, continue straight, go about 2.5 miles, we'll be on the left. She was there in a few minutes. She called somebody who knew. She got directions, and the being lost was taken care of. If you have doubts, if you feel like you're wondering or lost, if you feel like that and you ask God to guide you, then he will lead you out of your doubt and he will lead you back into your faith.
This evening, Brother Jeff talked much about doubt, but there is no doubt in this account in Mark 9 that this man knew that Jesus could heal his son. Look what trigger he pulled on it. He pulled the trigger of confession. Verse 17 tells us who said anything, who answered Jesus' questions. The disciples weren't going to answer. They were already humiliated. The Pharisees didn't have a word to say because they knew at this point they could be cornered. This man's father made a confession. He said, it's my fault what's going on here. I'm the cause of this ruckus. I'm the cause of this scene here. And I have to wonder, it's a challenge for me. Look what happened to his son. He was healed. And it's a challenge to me. Are we fathers willing to make a confession so our sons can be healed? All who are able, shall we reverently kneel for a word of prayer.